All right, let's start.
Yes.
I mean, I came to you through this book I reviewed. I mean, it was your first novel.
Yes, it was my first novel after writing columns for 20 years.
So what brought you to this book? Why did you start after all these columns, after this journalistic book?
Because I really, the only thing I've ever wanted was to write fiction. But then, you know, when I got out of college, you can't really make a living out of writing fiction. Maybe in other countries, but not in the Philippines. And so I thought, oh, I'll get another job that that requires writing. So I wound up writing a column, and that did well. And so I admit that whatever reputation I have right now is based on those columns that
yeah,
I
they're
wrote.
Famous. I mean, it's, when I talk to people and mention your name, I mean, it's about the columns. I mean, they've all read
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that's what they know me for.
And your name is really very big. I mean, whomever I ask, I mean, they, Jessica, wow, yeah, Jessica.
It's, okay.
Yeah, I know, maybe it's,
although,
maybe it's too much.
I really should apologize for the stuff I wrote earlier that I mentioned where it's really deadline driven. But anyway, 2016, I realized I was getting older. And you know you're getting older when you have to fill out a form and it says age, and then you have to subtract your age, and then you do it again because this is impossible. I can't be that old.
I know.
But then, you know, I realized, yes, I am that old, and I still don't have a first novel. And this is because the whole time I was writing my column, I was trying to write a novel, but I am not one of those people lucky enough to be able to think for a column and then think for a novel. A novel takes momentum. And the thing is, I would be trying to write my novel, and I would hit the right groove, I would be writing, and then, uh-oh, it's a deadline for my column, so I stop and write a column, and then I have to start again for the novel. So it never really, you know, it never really got past, you know, say page 100 or so. I did write something, but it was awful. It was like a collection of bad columns. So this is my first novel, and in order to write it, I had to stop writing a column altogether.
I think so. Yeah, you really have to get a clear mind and
yeah, it's I don't know. It's I guess a different part of my brain is required. So.
And then, why did you choose the Marcus Strand of the 90s? I mean, the 80s, late 80s.
Well, it's a lot of it is drawn from my own life, and this is a period I do remember. So it's not autobiographical in that, you know, Guada's life is not exactly mine, but I do draw on a lot of things. And I remember that, of course, you know, growing up a martial law baby, that was a huge, that had a huge impact on my life. And so I wrote what I know.
And okay, but coming, I mean, and if I see her, I mean, she's the hero is the daughter of a cook and
yes.
A very simple life. And I mean, just a big bracket. I mean, what about your life? What is your background as a kind of family? I mean, were you educated in a family of the middle class or?
Yeah, my family is very middle class, you know, the aspiring middle class.
The aspiring middle class,
The middle class that is constantly worried about falling out of the middle class and also trying to reach the upper class, but not quite getting there. So my mother was a teacher, my father was a lawyer.
So this is the way you were attached, you became attached to literature, to culture. It was through your mother and or?
It was more like, I've never really been a particularly sociable person. And so when they tried to force me to play with my cousins, I would withdraw into the house, find something to read, and sort of find a quiet corner. And I would rather read than play with other children.
Now I can see the similarities of your character
yes.
and the novel. Okay.
Yes. And then, so I was writing the novel. And it was your, the story of a young girl growing up, and the more I went on, the more I became bored because, you know, since it was drawing on my own life is boring, and I thought, And that's when my experience writing columns came in handy, because when I was writing a column, I wrote a lot about the diaspora, about overseas foreign workers, you know, and you know, I always kept an eye out for strange little stories, and I thought I can use those, you know, I can put those in my novel. I can make her parents former overseas foreign workers and so on.
Oh, that's interesting.
And also, I remember that I wrote a lot of columns, sort of satirizing society columns, and how rich people are so are constantly praised in the media. And I thought, hey, you know, rich people, they should be cut down to size. Yeah.
And for me, this kind of society that is drawn there, it really, when I read it, I thought, wow, this. At first, I thought this is our present. It can't be the past. But then, of course, with the Walkman appearing, I mean, they listen. Of course, there's no digital world still. But then it feels to me very digital in a way they talk to each other, in a way the society is organized. And of course, this dream of America that is still persistent, although America now is very different. Was this the idea behind it as well, to show that the past is not over, that the past has still an...
Yes. I wanted it to be of its own very specific time. For instance, I have very strong memories of, you know, the early Aquino administration, where there was a coup every month, an attempted coup d'etat every month. So I wanted to put that in. But at the same time, I wanted to point out that nothing really changes much. You know, the cast of characters may change a bit, but the system is always the same.
And did you see nowadays any perspective? Do you have any vision of another Philippines, another kind of politics? I mean, for example, I just read a biography on Joma, this communist leader, by I think Michael Beltran, and this was just published in German. And I thought, wow, it seems that this idea of communism, a kind of leftist vision, is still alive here. It is not alive anymore in Europe, I would say. But could this be part of a new kind of vision for the Philippines?
Well, I know that what has changed is that the period I wrote about, when there was a lot of immigration, and you know, the distributed economy really began. The distributed economy where Filipinos work abroad and send money home, and it allowed access to education and other benefits for a lot of people who would not otherwise have those benefits. That's been the advantage of contractual work overseas. And so, and at the same time, in the period covered by my novel, although it was just beginning, the BPO industry, business process outsourcing, started opening in the Philippines. And so there was social mobility. So the middle class changed. As in, I don't know if you can say that the middle class got bigger, but there was access to opportunity for a lot more people than there were before. Yeah.
This is always when I think that the only chance that autocratic systems have, that they open the middle class to a wider audience in a way, so that of course, through money, through a way of wealth, people get in a way corrupted, to put it in brackets, and then of course the interest in political change loosens. And then
a major difference in the political landscape is that while the film industry is not as lucrative and as powerful as it used to be, politics has become the next career for movie stars. movie stars have discovered that, you know, well, my movies aren't making millions and billions anymore, but I can run for public office. And because name recognition is all I need, we have plenty of celebrities, radio personalities, former movie stars who are now in the Senate and Congress.
Really? And do you think this is a good thing, or is it, I mean...
It's terrible.
It's terrible, of course, they don't have any substance, isn't it? I mean,
yes, because what they have to offer is name recognition, and mostly that's it. Mm-hmm. It's to be hoped that they decide to better themselves, somehow figure out public service, etc. But...
Yeah, I mean this is a global issue as well. When I look at the elections in Germany in the 70s, when every party had a program before they started for the campaigns.
Yes, and now...
And now it's just, as you say, it's personality.
It's personalities. Forget programs. What are programs?
Exactly. Programs are skipped anyway after they got elected.
Yeah, yes, and besides, you know, they're boring. You go to your campaign rally and listen to your program. No, but on the other hand, if you sing and dance, you'll stick around.
Okay, coming back to literature and your career as a... It's a writer. I mean, are you after having published these books? I mean, were you so excited that you planned for the next book, or are you?
Well, I finished the book in 2017.
Yeah.
And my thinking was, so this is before the pandemic, my thinking was, all my life, the only thing I've ever wanted besides writing was to actually live off my writing and not have to look for the random jobs which have sustained me all this time. And I thought, how am I going to do that? You know, the books that tend to do well in the Philippines are romances, young adult fiction, etc. And you know, I don't think I'm capable of that. So the answer that I hit upon was to get a literary agent who would somehow sell my book to a publisher who would pay me real money. And so, 2017, I started, you know, writing to literary agents in New York and London. And the thing is, if you write to London, they will say, no, the Philippines, you have to write to New York. I don't know why they have decided that the Philippines has to,
you know, I mean, it was a long time ago. It was part of the U.S. I mean, it's...
Oh, no, they didn't want us for a state. We were just, you know,
pity.
A colony. Anyway, so I got some near misses, as in some interested literary agents, but wasn't able to close the deal. And so for a while, you know, my novel was just sitting there. And then around 2019, I thought, I think I will give this to a publisher. So I gave it to Ateneo de Manila University Press. And so it was published. It came out during the pandemic, which is why a lot of people in Manila are only just discovering that it exists. Because, you know, during the pandemic,
they had time to read,
a pandemic, no events, etc. So we had to launch it online, etc. And so I finished that, and then I thought, well, now I'll have to write another novel, and I did, because, you know, pandemic. Vast chunks of time in which to do nothing, in which to do whatever he wanted. And so I wrote another novel. And this time I signed with a literary agent in New York. So it's as yet unpublished because my literary agent is still hawking it. But it's a historical novel.
What time of history are you covering?
It's the late 19th century. It's about the Filipinos who were in Europe, in Paris, London, in.
You mean like a bit like Rizal?
Rizal and his friends, who imbibed all these ideas, these newfangled ideas in Europe, and took them home, and the revolution happened, and so on. So I wanted to write a historical novel about, you know, those Filipinos?
Oh, that is interesting, because I always asked myself when I was here 2 years ago and I read Results, a novel, I always thought, why? I mean, why did he have the idea to go to Europe? I mean, why? And then he was in Germany for a long time,
yes.
so he knew German.
Yes.
And I thought, how did he learn it? When did he learn it? And how did he approach all the people? I mean, he must be a Filipino from the Philippines, being in Germany.
See,
this must be
thing.
Like a...
That was a thing. In the late 19th century, a middle-class family started sending their children, those who could afford it, started sending their children to Europe. And I was curious because we're never taught about what exactly they were doing in Madrid, in Paris, or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. This was my biggest question after reading Rizal.
We hear about it in school in a couple of sentences, like, oh, he stayed in this village. But there was nothing substantive in the history lessons. It was as if they went to Europe and they only spoke to each other. And they only did serious things when, you know, these were people in their early 20s. Of course, people in their early 20s will go out drinking and have shenanigans. And I thought, I want to write something about that. I imagined.
Of course, you need to imagine a lot.
What their lives would be like. Yeah.
And is it as short as your first novel, or is it a longer one?
It's longer, and so the literary agent has it, but the film rights have been bought. So
already.
Yes. Even before the novel has been published.
No, come on. That's quite unusual.
Because a good friend of mine, who's a producer, has a friend who's always wanted to get into film production, and she said, "Well, take this. You know, we'll do this."
Fantastic. I mean, this is a fantastic topic. I think, because as I said before, it's really to tell the story. I mean, even in Germany, many people are curious. Why? I mean, how did this all happen? So that's,
yes, and you know, we forget that they may be national heroes, but they're also young people.
Exactly.
You know, with ambitions, with
When thinking about this Spanish colonial times, I mean, this is another topic I always find interesting, that people still say that what the Spanish did, I mean, divide, rule by divide, I mean, this kind of old classic way of govern a country, a colony. Is it still persistent that language draws lines in Filipino society, that people who write in English are even more easily accepted, are better off than people who write in Tagalog and Filipino?
Unfortunately, yes, I think so. I'm sure that when you heard that the Philippines was the guest of honor in Frankfurt, you probably expected more books in Filipino.
Yes.
Was it a shock to find that most of the books are in English?
Yeah.
And that's because, at least in the period when I was going to school, our medium of instruction was English. And in the quote-unquote better schools, English was a medium of instruction. And so if you were fluent in English, it signified that you were from the educated class. And so most of the publishing was in English. But in recent years, publishing in other Filipino languages has really picked up. And of course, it was also a convenience because there are hundreds of Filipino languages, so sometimes it's just easier to converse in English. So.
Yeah, but I mean, countries like Indonesia with Bahasa, or Tanzania with Kiswahili, I mean, they were quite successful to implement a national language that in the end makes it easier to find a national identity as well. And
I have to say, colonial mentality runs strong in the Philippines. Yeah. I suppose I am an example of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. You have to recall that. Oh, of course, you know, we're not alone in this anymore.
Of course.
That we are a country where skin whitening products are big business. I always used to think, you know, how weird are we that we want to get lighter? And it turns out to be an Asian thing.
Not only Asian, I mean, I stayed a long time in sub-Saharan Africa, skin, I mean, white enhancement products are,
are you kidding? Koreans
are the bestseller in every drugstore.
Koreans are already so white, and they use
It looks terrible.
Skin whitening the cosmetics. So
But the good thing that the literature is not whitened in a way. I mean, where I've seen it's so diverse in the Philippine literature that this is not at all white only. I would say maybe the language is still major English, but even that is diverse, different. So there's some hope in the end, I would say.
Yeah, it's like it goes back to the story I was telling about Aswang Laut by Alan DeRayan, where I was reading it and I was enjoying it, but I was finding it difficult because it is in Filipino. And I was so ashamed of myself. I told Alan, I am going to translate your novel into English. And we just found a way to make it work. So.
Yeah, that's good. You never stop to learn in the end, and that's important. Okay, I would stop here.
Okay.